is Run, der Jogging-Cast mit Philipp Jordan und René Kreber.
Hallo, hier beim Fat Boys Run Podcast, heute eine Interviewfolge wieder. Und auch hier werde ich jetzt wieder auf Englisch weitermachen, denn sonst versteht mein Gast gar nicht, wie ich ihn vorstelle. And now I'm going to switch to English so my guest can understand me and who is my guest today. I could introduce him with welcome from the mean streets of London, Ontario, but I'd rather say that he has maybe the most unique and exciting podcast for marathon runners, as he's a professional elite marathon runner from Canada, and he gives us all a peek behind to the backstage room, if you want. Rob Watson, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, and thank you for that introduction. That's very kind of you.
Yeah, but to my knowledge, you're the only professional marathon athlete having a podcast and pretty much telling about all his doings, training, etc., etc. Or am I wrong?
I think there might be a couple other guys out there. But yeah, for the most part, it's weird. It's a lot of people have blogs and everyone's on the social media, but it seems like there's a lack of podcasts. So yeah, it's really fun. I mean, it's a lot easier to do a podcast than write a blog, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I know. That's why I do a lot of podcasts and no blogs. But yeah. How did the podcast start? Was it because you were too lazy to keep on your blog? Because as I understood, you were really into your blog too for quite some time, right?
Yeah, I did. I had a pretty popular blog there, and I had written about over 100 blog posts, and then I kind of got writer's block and I had nothing to write about anymore. But I was also at a race in Toronto, and after the race I was just drinking a few beers with my friends, and we were talking about podcasts, and the topic came up about a running podcast. Now we should do a running podcast, and my friend who I do the podcast with, Eric, he was there, and he doesn't know anything about running, but he's into the media and he likes that kind of stuff. So I said, well, I'm not going to do a podcast for myself, but if you do it with me, I'll do it. And he's like, well, I don't run. It's like, well, you're going to have to start running. So that's kind of how it came together, just over a few drinks after a run. It was, and then we kind of started and see how it went, and it's gone from there.
Yeah. And to the people who don't know the podcast yet, even though I advertised it a lot in our podcast, or at least I talked about it twice, yeah, it's called The Rob Watson Show, and there's, as you just mentioned, an old friend, and now turned, forcefully almost turned into an amateur runner. And we were witness of the journey from no runner to a 10K runner. And I don't know at the moment, we're in a limbo, it seems, but I thought, as you were too, if he will run the 10, he will like catch the spirit and want to go to the marathon all by himself. But at the moment, what's the plans at the moment? Is there really a half marathon or something scheduled, or?
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually training him for the half marathon right now. He's doing work. Yeah, he comes, you know, he plays the part where he talks about how he hates running and everything, but he's reluctantly buying in. He's doing very well with his training, Eric. Sorry, I didn't talk about that before. Yeah, my the Rob Watson Show. Thank you for talking about it on your show. I really appreciate that. That's really cool. Gets out to the German people. But yeah, Eric's been training for a half marathon now. He's moved back to South Korea, and his wife's pregnant, so he's going through more of the everyday Joe type of running situation, whereas I have it from the elite perspective, and he can relate to the masses a little more. And so it's cool. It's a good perspective we have from Eric, who claims he hates running, but I think he's a big liar.
That's the perfect segue for my next question. And to be honest, I was so unsure how to ask this question and how to blunt I can be without being insulting.
But that's okay. You Germans are known for being your blunt. I expect it.
Oh, we have to talk about the non-greeting German runners you mentioned once. But but I first have to start that, is he playing a role, or is he the way he presents himself on the show, let me put it like this. I'm not Eric, so I'm gonna trying to be as nice as possible. You see, because I'm doing a few podcasts, not just running, and I know sometimes you start playing a persona, and maybe you're come over as a very nice guy. There needs to be some antagonist to that, and is he just playing a role, or is he like an edgy character?
Eric's It's funny. He's not as big of a dink as, like, in real life he is. He can be a cynical guy, and he can be, but he's not mean. Like, you know, he calls people losers and stuff, but he would never call someone a loser to their face. Maybe it's because he's on the radio and he's protected from the radio. Maybe he's one of those internet trolls. But no, he's not. He has those type of elements to his personality, but he does kind of play it up a little bit in the podcast, I think. I hope. I mean, yeah. I hope he's not really like that, because he's one of my best friends. I've been friends with him since I was 4 years old. So he's always been kind of a smart-assy type guy, but he's by no means a big jerk like that.
But I think that somehow keeps the podcast also entertaining, as he's always putting you on the spot and asking questions. People who love running, as you do and as I certainly do, don't really ask anymore, like, why would people do this and that? This is a lot of his questions start like this. And he was also being offensive to walkers, like professional walkers. I really enjoy him, even though I sometimes think, come on, please, that at least to a certain point, let that be a role he's playing. Okay.
He's actually very good. He kind of keeps the podcast going, because he does ask questions, and I've been in the running my whole entire life, so sometimes I take things for granted. Maybe I just assume people have the same thoughts, and then he'll be like, that makes no sense, and I'll have to think about it, like, huh, maybe that is a little bit odd. And he is, he's blunt, and he can be a dick, but he's not, if you ever met him, if you've ever met him in real life, he's a lot more personable and friendly, I would say.
Okay, that's nice to hear. Maybe the most dull question ever asked, and I bet you hear it a lot, but still it is always interesting. How did you start running, and what age, and how did you end up being a professional? I mean, is there also luck involved in basketball or team sports? You always have to be at the right spot also to be spotted by some talent scout, but how did your career evolve, and how did it start?
Yeah, I suppose that's a necessary question to ask. I've been running pretty much my whole life. My family's pretty big into athletics. We're an athletic family. My aunt is she was an Olympic heptathlete in the 1984 Olympics, and I've had my older brother, who's my coach, he's always been very athletic. So when we were kids, we'd always go to these road races around Ontario, where I'm from. And so when I was 6 years old, I went to go watch my brothers run a 10-kilometer road race, and I was just kind of bored and grumpy, and I forced my parents to let me run the race as well. So when I was 6 years old, I ran my first 10K road race, and then my other older brother, who was a year older than me, he was 7, so he started running them also. So when we were like 6 and 7, we would start doing these road races, to, you know, just something to do, and it kind of just grew from there. We'd always do athletics in school, is, you know, part of like the clubs and such. And so I've always just kind of run from there. And I was also a big, I really liked soccer. I guess you guys obviously call it football, but I'll call it soccer because I'm in Canada.
We call it foosball.
Foosball. Yes. I, you know, you guys are pretty good at it over there. But mostly those are my two sports, running and foosball, and I wasn't very good at soccer, so I kind of just let the running take over, and I just, as I did it, and I just got better and better at it, and then the opportunities presented themselves, and I went to university on a track and field scholarship and went to school down in the United States, and it's just something I've always really loved, and I just wanted to keep pursuing it and see how good I could be at it, and it's just led from one step to the next, and then and that's where I got to where I am today. I was a steeplechaser for a long time. That was my main event on the track, and then I've just progressed into marathons.
Nice. It is not that common to be able to live from running. And I don't know if you know about the I don't know the title anymore, but the book about the Ekiden runners in Japan. Have you heard about it? Have you read it?
I have not read that book, but I know those Ekidens are really, really cool. I've run one in Japan before, and that was a really fun experience. But no, what is it about?
No, yeah, it's about Ekiden runnings and how big running is in Japan. Like, it is the biggest sport, even above baseball, and every runner is a star. And what he does in the book is to show how big running is in Japan. He compares it to running in Europe, and I think England and Canada is not that different regarding income as a runner and sponsorship mm-hmm. and everything. And it becomes quite obvious that in Japan it's unique that they have so many people being able to live off running. That's why I was like, it is not that common to be able to live from long distance running, especially.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I love the Japanese running culture. Like I said, I've been there once for a race, and it was a huge deal. Like, people got really, really excited, and all the best Japanese runners were, you know, they're pretty popular, pretty famous, and so that's really cool. I appreciate that. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely not easy to make a living from being a long distance runner in Canada or in America, for sure, because it's not as popular of a sport. And it's one of those things where, you know, you find a way to make it work if you really want to do it. I mean, it's your passion and something you care about. It's by no means going to make you rich, but it's going to provide lots of opportunity in other ways. You know, it's just, you know, yeah. Like I've gotten to travel, and it's just been so much fun. So
yeah. I know. I mean, I'm a big fan of make your passion your job, and even though you're not being really rich, you have the richest life compared to others who have a 9-to-5.
Exactly. I love it. Like, I go, I have, most of my friends make more money than me, but when, you know, it's lifestyle and stimulus and experience, that's, you know, it doesn't always come down to finances.
And as I mentioned, 9-to-5, oh, I'm such a segue master here again. how about a little insight in your, many people, yeah, don't know how a professional runner's daily day looks like. What's your daily life like? I mean, how many hours per day do you practice? What else do you do? Do you sleep a lot? Do you rest a lot? Or do you rehabilitate from long runs? Or yeah, give us an insight. And what did you do yesterday? Or is that, no, yesterday was Sunday. Maybe you were just chilling yesterday. I don't know. But what's your common day?
Yeah, it depends. It depends on the time of year, like what I'm training for. Like I'll take an example of like when I'm in heavy marathon training, like say like 8 weeks out from a marathon. What I'll do is, you know, I'll wake up and I'll drink a bunch of coffee because coffee is my lifeblood. But yeah, and then in the morning I'll go for a run, anywhere from probably 16 to 22 kilometers. That'll be my longer run, and then I'll go home and I'll eat breakfast, whatever, and stretch, and then I will take a nap, and then I'll go to the gym usually and do some gym work, some strengthening there, some core work, some stuff like that, and then I'll go home again, and then I'll run again later in the afternoon. So pretty much every day I do two runs and then another session of running specific type of activity. I spend minimum of three hours a day towards my running to make myself a better running, and that's just the actual physical act. And then there is stuff like when I take a nap, I call it, like, it's part of my job to take a nap, because rest is very, very, very important in running. You know, a lot of people think of it as like the actual physical activities, like, you know, that is obviously very important, but the recovery is just as important as the physical activity. That's what allows you to do it day after day after day. So that's something that's very I take very seriously also.
Yeah, in the book Running with Kenyans, one of his theories, or to answer the question why Kenyans are so good, was they sleep a lot, and they just lie in bed, except every minute they don't run, they seem to be in the horizontal mode. At least that's what in the book is mentioned, so I totally agree from an amateur outside viewpoint that recovery seems to be one of the keys to success.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely.
And you mentioned breakfast food-wise. Do you follow a certain food pattern? We have a lot of vegans in the running business, or do you have a what's your dietary advice?
Yeah, well, like I have to obviously eat. I eat a lot because when I'm training heavy, I'm doing upwards of 250, 260 kilometers a week. So calorically, you need to be taking in a lot of food to fuel that. But I just try to eat clean and healthy. It's nothing too fancy, too crazy. Just keep simple foods, grains and lots of vegetables, lots of fruit. I love bread, lots of bread. That's my main source of carbs. But so I just try to not eat a lot of junk food, like not a lot of sweets, not a lot of sugars.
But you have a sweet tooth, right? If I remember
I
right.
do, and that's one of my hardest things is that I do. I love my sweets. I love my chocolate. So that's one of my biggest things to cut out when I'm
Okay.
running. And it's just. I eat a lot of peanut butter too. I really love peanut. I don't know how big peanut butter is over in Europe, but it's big over here. You guys.
It is in the Netherlands way more than in Germany. I live in the Netherlands, and peanut
Okay.
butter is a big thing here. And it is not that big of a thing in Germany. They eat jam. Not they don't ever mix peanut butter with jam, as far as I can remember in Germany.
They're missing out. They're missing
Yeah, I
out.
know, I
It's a
know.
great combination.
But peanut butter itself is to my understanding, if it's not the worst processed ones, is quite good for running, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like the all natural ones can be quite good because it's just peanuts, so it's got the proteins, it's got the fats, but it's also very calorically dense, so too much of it can be a bit of a problem. But yeah, it's fine. Yeah, you guys are more Nutella. You guys eat a lot of
Exactly.
Nutella rather than
Exactly.
peanuts.
That's talking about that's my sweet tooth, and the reason why it's called Fat Boys Run, by the way.
Well, I was over in the I ran the Rotterdam Marathon one year, and I noticed in the hotels, like, to put on your toast, they had like sprinkles, just
Oh,
like chocolate
nice one.
sprinkles.
Yes. This for Germans is also something they don't know, but the sprinkles is the thing in the Netherlands. What and they have these sprinkles in all imaginable all flavors that you can imagine, like fruit sprinkles, white chocolate sprinkles. I don't know if you know Speculatius. I bet you don't know it. It's a
Speculoos.
yeah. This cookie.
Yeah.
It is this special mixture of cinnamon and other spices. Is that's a Dutch thing.
Oh, it's
It was
big.
invented in we have that as these little sprinkles as well. And by the way, we have it as a spread for on the bread as well. So if you're next time in Rotterdam, you go to a supermarket and try to find that and take it home. It will be your next sweet tooth, by the way. And
Actually, they have that. It's made its way over to North America. They have
oh,
Speculoos now in Trader Joe's,
but do
and
they have it
people
as a
love it.
spread and as a sprinkle for on bread?
Just the spread. They don't have the sprinkle.
Oh wow, they did they, that spread made it did not ever make it to the neighbors in Germany. They took the route right over the sea.
It's delicious.
Yeah, that's it's funny. How did you like? I ran Rotterdam this year, by the way, and I was
Okay.
untrained and came out of a sickness phase, and it wasn't my greatest run. But how did you like Rotterdam? And you planned actually to run Rotterdam this year too, and it didn't work out, right?
Yeah, that's when I got hurt. I got hurt last winter, so it affected my Rotterdam training. Yeah, I ran Rotterdam in 2012, and I liked it a lot. I like it. The German, I mean, sorry,
The Dutch.
the European races are so much flatter. Like the courses are so much easier than over here in North America. Over here in North America, everyone wants to make a marathon course like scenic, and they want to show off their city, so the courses are harder. But when you're running a race, you don't really pay attention to that. I just want to run fast, and I'll go look at the city later on. And Rotterdam was a very fast course. I liked it a lot, and it was really well organized. And yeah, so I ran. That was my fastest marathon ever at the time. So I quite enjoyed it.
But you have to know before you say European marathons that the Netherlands is as flat as a table. The whole country.
Yes.
And the same thing is with Berlin. Berlin is also very flat. Why Berlin is the fastest marathon on earth, I think.
And, yes.
But we have quite hilly races. I mean, you can join the Ultra Trail du Mont Blanc if you want, and you will gain some height. But it's true. It is really flat in the Netherlands. Why I hope you come back next year to the Rotterdam Marathon. But I don't know, as a professional, I think you have like one or two big marathons you plan each year. It's not more, right? Or it's maybe just one. I don't know.
Yeah, I do. I'll probably do two, like three marathons a year. Yeah. So, but you find the ones that you really want to hit. And generally it's one in the fall and one in the spring. And so like on Sunday, I'm going to be running the Chicago Marathon over here in America. And then we'll do another one in the spring. And in all likelihood, it would Rotterdam's a great one to do, just because it provides a great opportunity to run fast. Because in the spring and over here in North America, there's no really fast courses. And so if you want to run really fast, we got to travel abroad. I would love to run a Japanese marathon at some point, because those ones are really, really cool as well. But just with the timing and such. So yeah, generally it's two big ones a year. And then if there's like a championship race, like world championships or a Commonwealth Games or something like that, then you do that one as well. But yeah, there's only so many opportunities to run really fast.
How about the Olympic? It was a big topic on your podcast. I never understood exactly what you have to do now to become a member of the Canadian Olympic team. Are you still in the race? I mean, is it possible if you run well in Chicago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the biggest goal in Chicago is for the Canadian to qualify. What we do is we have a Canadian standard, and it's 2:12:50. So if you run under 2:12:50, then you qualify for the Olympics. And then at the end of the qualifying window, which will be until April, they'll take the three fastest people and they'll be on the Canadian Olympic team. So I've run 2:13:29 in the marathon. So I need 1 second a kilometer. So I'll be aiming to do that on Sunday in Chicago. So yeah, I still have that opportunity. And then they'll have, if I don't make it then, I'll have another. And that's when I'll probably come over to Rotterdam and try to do it again.
Yes.
But hopefully I will do it in Chicago.
But Chicago, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that this pretty windy city?
Well, it's called the Windy City, definitely. But hopefully we get a nice day, because it's a good course. They've set world records there before. It generally has good times. So here's to hoping that we get a nice day and we can just go out there and do work, because my training has been going quite well. So hopefully I can run fast in Chicago.
And you're now in the tapering phase, I guess, because you said if you start 10 days before your run, there's nothing you can do anymore, which I hated to hear, because I have next week, a Sunday, a marathon in Amsterdam, and I have to run, because I was sick again, unfortunately, run a long run this Friday. So I'm not really fitting your time frame. But what do you do in your tapering phase? Is it you run like little jogging runs, 10Ks, or do you do nothing?
I'll taper down the training starting, a few weeks out. So like, 3 weeks ago, I ran 250K, then 2 weeks out, I run, or like 230K. Last week, I ran 200K this week. So you just bring down the training to bring your legs, kind of freshen up your legs. And the workouts get shorter too, the specific workouts. Instead of doing an hour tempo run, you'll do like a 40-minute tempo run and then like a 30 tempo run. And this is race week, so this week is really, really low. So you still train, you still run, because you don't want to completely go flat and completely be stagnant and get rusty. So you still run, but you just not enough to really beat yourself up, just kind of going through the motions. So tomorrow I'll just do like 5x1 kilometer just to keep the running there, but not enough to make myself tired. But yeah, have you run the Amsterdam Marathon before?
No.
I've heard that's a good one. I've heard that's a that's obviously like you were saying, Holland's really really flat, or
but you have the bridges, really you have the little tiny hills in between. But I have to see if my knee is I feel my knee. It's not hurting, but I feel it, and it gives me this unpleasant, uncomforting feeling of maybe ruining my knee. But we will see. I'm going in there with a relaxed mind of maybe DNFing, and you know about DNFing.
Oh, I've been there before, definitely. Definitely. That's what you hope for the best. No, you hope for the best, but you know, prepare for the worst. So you know, you gave yourself a shot, and if it doesn't work out on that day, there's always another race to run. But yeah, even those little bridges at 35 kilometers in a marathon will feel like a mountain.
Yeah, exactly. That's, by the way, Rotterdam Marathon. The bridge, when you cross the bridge, the big bridge, in the beginning, I felt like, oh, this is nice, and you enjoy it. And the second time, I was like, that bridge must be transformed while I was on the other side.
It was exactly. Really, it's the same bridge. Yeah, it's got twice as long and twice as tall.
But
it's funny. Yeah, the marathon, it just does crazy things to your body and your mind. It's, I don't know why we do it, but it's a heck of a thing.
Talking about distance, I think you mentioned it once, but are you interested in the ultra marathon scene at all? And do you follow the heroes like Kilian Hornet or Anton Krupicka and all the big ultra trail races? Because you might join whenever your marathon career is finished, or is it something you keep for later?
Yeah, it's something I would definitely be interested in doing, just because I find it to be like one of the things I really really like about just running in general and the marathon is I find it's a great balance between a mental and a physical challenge. And I think in ultra is the exact same way. It's just how far can you push your limits and how far can you push your boundaries. And I think one of the best things about the marathon is you get to find out a lot about yourself once you've pushed yourself to the absolute limit, see how your body's going to react, see how your mind's going to react. And I think that's very rewarding. And I think, you know, you're going out there and you're trying to run 100 kilometers or something like that, you're going to go through those same type of experiences where you're going to find out just what you're made of. And that's something I would like to definitely look into and try. So I will, when I'm done trying to run really fast, I will definitely look into doing some of those longer ultra stuff, because I think it's a neat little and I think it's a really cool little community too. They're very supportive, and yes, it's a neat little niche within the running community, because people who do it, they love it, and it's fun to be a part of something like that. So I don't really follow it too closely. Like I know those names, I know the guys you're saying, and some pretty quick marathoners have made, like Max King, American guy's done pretty well.
Yeah.
So I would love to do Comrades. I think that'd be a really really fun race to do.
Yeah.
In South Africa. And yeah, the thing is, the trails, I'm just not, I'm tall and I'm skinny, so I'm not very agile, so I'm afraid I'd hurt myself on the trails. So maybe, like, I don't know, I'm not too technical of a runner, but I would like to try the distance, the long stuff.
Yeah, what's the longest distance you covered training-wise, or, I mean, at all? Did you go way above the marathon ever?
I've done 50 kilometers before, just because I wanted to see if I could do a 50 kilometer run. And it was hard. Like, you know, no matter how fast I'm going, to be running for that long is hard. Like I'll do 40 kilometer training runs. I'll be doing it at much slower than race pace, but it's still always a hard distance.
So. And still you're 2 hours earlier done with your training than I, if I run these long distances.
I
actually do a way better job than you, because I sport for like a lot longer.
That's what I always say. Like, the thing about the marathon is, like, it doesn't matter how fast you're going. Like, even if you're going for 4 hours, 5 hours, to be doing a physical activity for four or 5 hours, that's exhausting. That's a long time to be focused mentally, and also a long time to be out there doing something physically. So it's more power to you. Like, people who can do that, they get my respect, definitely.
Okay, look, I got respects. I got my props from Rob Watson.
There you go, man. By the way, we're all runners out there.
The thing and this is a segue again, so listen up. I like the ultra marathon scene, even though I did just one tiny trail ultra marathon so far, because I honestly believe that doping is almost non-existent, because there's not too much money involved in ultra running. And doping is a big topic, or at least a reoccurring topic in your podcast. And I love the way how outspoken you are about it as a professional. And I admire you keep on running whilst you almost for sure know every time you are standing at the starting line that a whole bunch of people around you might be on some doping. What's your opinion on that? Or how do you
keep on keeping
the faith?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, and it can be like, that's the cool thing about that ultra running is, yeah, I don't think there's a lot of cheating going on, and it's more pure. That's something I really love about running, is it's the purity of it, and it's just a natural activity, and it's all about, you know, controlling your own body and your own mind and getting the best out of it. And that's why I don't understand the doping mindset. Well, I can understand, because that comes down to money and such, but and it's frustrating, because it does seem like it's such a reoccurring theme, especially recently. Like, so many people are doing the doping, and, you know, I get upset about it, and it's frustrating. But I look back to why I'm running, and I'm running to see what I can do for myself, and how good I can make myself, and how I can train my own body and my own mind to be in its absolute best. And obviously I'm very competitive and I want to do well in races, but all I can do is control what I can control, and I can take care of myself. If other people are going to be out there doping and they're going to be cheating, that sucks and it's unfortunate, but hey, I can only worry about myself, and I love running. I love the running sport. And I think that's also why I can really relate, and I kind of like the mid packing and like the people who just do it for the joy of the sport. That's why I really like, you know, I can relate a lot more to like a 3-hour marathoner than a 2-hour 205 marathoner sometimes, because I think the reasons we're doing this sport are more similar. I'm not doing it for money. I'm not doing it for fame. I'm doing it just because I love the sport of running. So doping is an unfortunate thing that happens in our sport, but it's there's still so much more to get out of it than that.
Yeah. The marathon talk, you were also a guest on that one, and they are heavily debating in the recent episodes about doping and what could you do to prevent it. And a lot of times I think there might be someone like you can write history to step forward and say, hey, then let's up the doping controlling mechanisms. If it's so easy to slip through, maybe we should document everything we do, eat, train the doctors, be as transparent as possible, mm-hmm. and shout that into the running professional community and say, hey, let's all do that, and let's eradicate the problem from the top, sort of.
Definitely. Something like just transparency is so, like, could be something that's so important. Like, what they do now, that I think that's catching a lot of people, is the biological passport, where they take your samples, and just over time, so they do more testing, and then they have a bias. So they have like a baseline, like this athlete, this is their levels, and if they see, you know, variations in their levels, then they know something's up. So even just like having a database and like showing like, all right, this is it, this is the way I am, and, you know, and just keeping transparency, and just more doping, and the more testing, the better, and just being able to, you know, hold people accountable. And I think the punishments need to be stricter.
Yeah.
I think we need lifetime bans. I think we need criminal prosecution. Like, it's cheating, it's stealing, and it's also illegal to be doing it. So there needs to be some legal ramifications outside the world of running. Like, you know, you get caught, from you just can't do the sports. Like, no, like, give them some jail time or something. Just Make the punishment not worth the crime.
Yeah. That Lance Armstrong is still running free and even starting at races and making a lot of money, and the press is interested in him, is a scandal. And we had a Dutch bike racer who was caught cheating, and every time I see him on a television show, he gets invited to sports talk programs, giving his opinion on the Tour de France, and he's now coaching a team. And I think this needs to stop. People who are involved with doping shouldn't even be allowed to be coaches anymore, because this, how could you get rid of a problem if you, I mean, if I caught someone having sex with a kid, I wouldn't afterwards recommend him as a kindergarten teacher. So why is that in sports so different? And I'm totally agreeing with you that it should be that it's a criminal offense. If I betray someone and get rich of it, I have to go to prison if I'm a con artist.
And yeah, it's fraud.
Fraud, exactly. And Lance Armstrong, that's fraud in the biggest way. He tried to silence people, he threatened people, and he got rich off fraud. And it seems that he will run off free and that he will stay rich. And I think he shouldn't have a dime left of sports, even though there was a day he might have been clean. And I don't accept the excuse that people say, yeah, but everybody's doing it. If we start like that, we can throw the garbage on the streets, and because we can't change as a single person, we can't change anything. I strongly believe we have to, especially as a single person, start with ourselves. But
I agree. That's definitely the way it is. Yeah, it's like that's such a cop out, such a terrible excuse, just because everyone else is doing it. That's no way to. Yeah, like if everyone jumped off a bridge, right? If everyone is, it's stupid. That's a bad way to look at it, and it is. It's fraud, and it's. I don't know. It's, if it was in any other aspect of society, the punishments would be much cheaper. I mean, sorry, much stricter. So
yeah, and the fans also, they in the comment sections, whenever Armstrong is mentioned anywhere on the internet, what they say. They sort of flip that everybody's doing it around and say, yeah, but he must be a good racer, because as we know, everybody in the Tour de France is doped. So it's not that he's bad. He was still the best. And I don't accept it, because I know people who were really good bike racers and who had to stop racing because they there was this moment where they said, hey, either you use... or you're out because you're not fast enough. And I think this culture must stop. Yeah, but do you have any idols or role models? Because if I'm running, I have these trail runners I look up to. I listen to your podcast. This kind of motivates me to keep on running. I mean, I love running. I love running in nature. I love the whole. Effect of almost meditating. I love the moment after running. It's maybe the best one. It's just like sex.
Yeah.
It's like the nice relaxing part after it. But I do read a lot of books. I have a lot of documentaries about running, and this sort of keeps me going out on a weekly basis several times. But you have to go out on a daily basis, and I wonder if there's. I mean, every kid. When it runs, when I was a kid and I ran, I always imagined like, and he's running in top of the marathon and blah, blah, blah. And, but we all, if we're really honest, we all have this kind of kid in ourselves our whole life. And I wonder, how do you keep your motivation up with the regarding role models or idols?
Yeah, that's a great topic, because yeah, there's so many different motivating factors that gets me out the door. You know, I have my own personal goals, and I dream of, you know, running the Olympics and this and that. But there are also runners, like just great inspiring runners out there. I do have role models. I'm a big fan of the runners from the 70s and 80s. Like the Steve Jones is one of my favorite runners of all time. Rob DiCostella from Australia, the Bill Rogers, the Frank Shorters, like the great marathoners of the past. I really look up to those guys. I really like, I spend a lot of time watching old YouTube videos of runners, and just their great races. And just, I just find it cool, because those guys, they were, you know, they were fearless and they worked so hard, and you know, they did it. And, you know, it's like, well, so why can't I? Like, a good friend of mine, Reed Coolsat, he just ran the Berlin Marathon, and he ran 2:10:29. And I've been friends with Reed for a long time, and I've just seen how hard he's worked and all he's come through, and to be, for him to be running this fast still, it's just, it's very inspiring. It's very motivating. And it is, it's like, you know, these guys did it. They're human. Like, well, why can't I do it? So yeah, you do have idols like that, and people you look up to, and people who've set a precedent. And it's very important to have, you know, people like that, and have role models, because the role models, they kind of, you know, they guide the way, and then there can be days when you don't want to do it, and you can think of it, you know, like, they were doing it, you know, if it's cold and it's rainy, it's like, yeah, but they did it, and that's why they were great. So yeah, it's good to have, you know, they've set the example, and you got to follow it, and it keeps you accountable. So yeah, role models are very, very important.
And as you already brought up motivation, outside role models, what else do you do? Do you, for example, use music when you train, or iPod, or you just meditate and think about the world, or what do you do while running?
It depends, man. It depends. Because like I was saying, I generally run twice a day every day. So I'm going to run a lot of runs. Some days I need to throw on some music and just and kind of just zone out and just run. Other days I don't. It depends from a day-to-day factor. Like when I'm training for a specific marathon, it's good, because you know, you just the thing about, the biggest thing I do is like, I set goals, and you set your goals, and you set realistic goals, but at the same time, when you set your goals, you have to realize what you're getting yourself into. It's like, it's one thing to set a goal, it's another thing to actually do work and pursue it. And so I'm running for a purpose here, and it's like, my goals are pretty ambitious, and I have to do the work. The work involved is in the next step. So my motivation is, I want to be an Olympic athlete, and to be an Olympic athlete, you got to be working really, really hard, and that's just hold yourself accountable to what you've set out to achieve. So yeah, some days, I mean, I may not want to do it, but it has to be done. Like, running is my passion, and it's something I love to do, but at the same time, it's my job. So some days it's my job. Most days it's just something I'm lucky and fortunate to get to do. So it's just, each run is, it serves its purpose, and there's certain things getting me out the door. So yeah, it's all sorts of different aspects of it.
Okay. Do you, you've been to Europe a lot. You mentioned in your podcast that it's different all over the world as how runners greet when they see each other. And you specifically mentioned that in Germany, people don't greet back. And I have to say, I experienced it totally differently in cities here in the Netherlands. You can run and have 10 people say hi, and you can have these. I always hate it, by the way, and I'm German. When I do the nod or say even hi or whatever, and the person definitely sees me and then looks straight forward and runs through. And I don't know if this is a German thing or a Dutch thing or a European thing, but what's the main differences that you have, or is there any differences in European running lifestyle and Canadian, North American running lifestyle?
Yeah, I guess a lot of it just depends on the community. Like, the absolute worst was when I was in Russia. In Russia, like, people don't even like to acknowledge other people are in existence for something like that. And yeah, in Germany, it was same. Yeah, I would run through the Tiergarten there, and I'd say hi, and they would just look at me and keep on running. And I'm like, okay. And in Vancouver, where I live in Vancouver, generally you get a smile, you get a wave. When I'm down here in America, it's kind of the same way. I can't put a finger on it. I don't know why. Like, I don't think Germans are mean by any means. I just don't. Maybe this is not something that's part of their society. They don't.
No, but what I now you said Tiergarten, so you were in the park in Berlin, right? Because I for myself set the rule when I run through Utrecht in the Netherlands, and I run through the city, I would have to say hi like 50 times with 10 within 10K. So there's this unwritten rule that if you run in the city, as long as it's not a very beautiful girl looking at you, you just keep on running, because otherwise you would be exhausted by just waving and saying hi. And I just wonder, maybe that the people in Tiergarten have this sort of unwritten rule too. But then again, in Canada, you also might run in a park where it's crowded and still the people say hello, so we will never know.
Yeah, I guess it's just an individual thing, because there's definitely times in Vancouver where I've run and I've nodded and smiled, and I have not, they haven't reciprocated, but most of the time they do. So maybe it's just a percentage-wise. But yeah, who knows? Maybe it's just a weird thing that runners have. I don't know. But I would definitely, to anyone listening, smile and wave. You know, it's just nothing wrong with that.
Now a few just I think like two or three more questions, but I can sort of bind them in one question or two. Future plans would be the headline for my questions. First of all, the future plans you mentioned, Chicago. I mean, this is a really not so distant future.
Oh,
And
6 days.
by the way,
6 days.
I sorry, I have to come up with another question. When I had my first marathon, I was hardly sleeping like 2 days away from the marathon, and I was so, and I wonder, as a professional runner, do you still the night before have a hard time falling asleep, or is it like you have some special professional techniques to get the good night rest?
I wish there were some secrets. I wish no, but I'm the same way. I generally don't really sleep the night before a race, because there's so many nerves going into it and there's so much emotion going into it, and it's just like there's so many thoughts going through your head. Like, you're excited and you're nervous and you're a little bit scared because you've been working so hard for this race, and the day is finally there. Like, this is like, you've done every run you've done for the last few months has been kind of geared towards this moment. So there's that anxiety, and there's that built up tension. So you think about that so much, and at the same time, it's also scary because you know that marathons are really, really hard, and you know you're about to make yourself suffer a lot. So you're kind of like, oh my gosh, why am I even doing this? And so there's just so much emotion, and it's hard to sleep with so many thoughts going through your head. So I wish there was a secret, and I wish there was a technique, but it's just the reality of the situation. It's the night before the marathon. It's stressful. You just want to get out there and race and get it over with and then go have a beer. But yeah, so this week is hard, the last week leading into it, because like I was saying before, there's not a whole lot you can do to get better. So there's a lot of time to think about what you've done, and you know, your second thought, you know, some, you know, 1 hour you're ready to go and you're super confident, and then the next hour you're like, oh my gosh, maybe I didn't work enough, and then you know, you have your knee, you're like, oh my gosh, how's my knee gonna be? There's
Yeah.
too much thinking. It's like our brains are just like, I wish you could just have a shut off switch, right? But that's not the way the humans, we just think too much.
But luckily, when you're right before the start, your brain helps you to boost the adrenaline, and you don't know, you don't even feel. I hope so. At least I don't even feel anymore that there's a knee at all. I just want to run, and everything is fine because
Yeah.
of that power. But I unfortunately know that after like 20, 25 kilometers, that effect is sort of gone, and I'm all alone there again, and my knee hurts, and
Yeah.
everything, every inch of my body too. Future.
Reality sets in, definitely.
Now, you run Chicago, and you mentioned maybe Rotterdam. So, if I understand correctly, you go from race to race. You don't already have scheduled a few marathons, and then just pick one that most fits the your condition, or do you just do you now after Chicago you plan ahead?
Yeah, it's what happens generally when I sit down, I plan my year. I'll have a rough schedule, but it's very flexible, and it kind of goes with the progression of every runner does it differently. Like some people just, it's based on their personality where they have to have a set plan. They know they're this and this and this, whereas I kind of have to go with the flow of the of the way things are going. So yeah, we'll see how Chicago goes, and then after the Chicago race, we'll sit back and we'll see what our goals are and what still needs to be achieved. And if I need to run another marathon, another fast marathon to get a qualifying time, I'll definitely probably pencil in Rotterdam in April, because that's a very good opportunity to run fast. So yeah, it's a loose schedule where you have races that are options, and it's like, you know, there's always the Boston Marathon, which is really fun. It's in North America, but it's not a qualifying race, you know. And then there's Rotterdam Marathon, where you can go and try to run really fast and get a new PB. So yeah, the future is, there's a vague idea, and then you just kind of once it's closer, and then it's the next race, then you really nail it down and you get specific. But yeah, so it's a loose schedule. You gotta have flexibility.
But if I understood right, in case you make the Olympic Games time in Chicago, you will sort of take a break for half a year, or what?
No, what I would have to do is I'd have to still train, and I'm still gonna run a marathon in the spring, because even if I run the time in Chicago, there's other runners that can get a better time and maybe bump me off the team, right? So I have to be ready to roll.
Reed is already in the roster, right? Yes.
Yeah, I would say Reed's pretty much guaranteed. Because I don't think three other Canadians are going to come out of anywhere and run under 2:10:30. So I think Reed is very safe. Whereas if I go to Chicago and I run 2:12:30, which would be a qualifying time, but I know there's other Canadians who are capable of running faster than that and could bump me off the team, because Eric Gillis has run his PB is better than that. Dylan Weix's PB is better than that. Dylan ran 2:10:47 in Rotterdam in 2012 to qualify for the Olympics. So there's guys who are capable of knocking me off the team. So I can't just rest and assume I'm going to be on the Olympics. So I'm going to have to keep training and be ready to run one in the spring. We'll just see where the other guys are falling and how things are setting up at that point. But like loosely right now, we do have Rotterdam as the next race after Chicago. We'll just see where things play out, and also how training goes, right? Because I was supposed to do Rotterdam last year and I got hurt and I couldn't do it. So it's like, and that's the thing with running, it's not set in stone, because you never know how the body's going to respond to the training. So I mean, you got to be flexible.
I can already offer you now, if you have a few days off after Rotterdam, come to visit me, and I show you a really nice beer place. Even though I don't drink beer myself, but we have a place here who has so many nice beers, a Belgium a beer bar. But just saying. The other thing, I as you are so open and almost creative about your running, like you wrote a blog, you do the podcast. And I'm the biggest fan of books from runners. And there's not a lot of books from marathon runners except training books, how to run the perfect marathon. But I love the books that are more from the ultra marathon field. Okay. The books, the more describing the experience, describing the whole story, the whole journey from the little boy to the professional and the most exciting races. Is there a chance you write a book one day, or have you ever thought about it seriously?
Yeah, I mean, I love writing. Writing is something I really enjoy. So, you know, after my career is done, I mean, it would be fun to kind of write your memoirs and just to get it all on paper and get the whole experience. Because I think in writing, it's a great way to reflect and it's a great way to capture the and chronicle what's happened. And I would definitely do something like that. Have you read the Charlie Spedding book?
No.
It's called From Last to First or something like that. It's Charlie Spedding. Charlie Spedding was third in the 1984 Olympic Marathon. It's a great book, because it goes from his whole entire running career, and it's not a training manual. It's an actual story. It's an
actual memoir. Charlie what? Spedding?
Charlie Spedding. Yes, he was a British marathoner.
Okay, I just wrote that down because there's not a running book that I at least that's what I want to one day want to say, be able to say that there's not a running book I haven't read, but
I like. Read Charlie's. It's a good book. It's funny. It's quirky. He's a funny guy. He's a witty guy, and it's a good story. It's a really good story, and it talks about his training a lot. And it would be something like that. It's an easy read, and I would one day definitely get all my thoughts on paper and go through the whole career, because it is, it's fun. There's so much more to it than just running. It's the experience and the people, and it's been so much fun up till now. So hopefully I can keep doing it for several more years.
That's a perfect segue to say goodbye, because whenever you write the book, make sure to come back and promote it in our podcast. And please keep that positive vibe and spirit up. But I'm not scared you will lose it. We all wish you all the luck in the world to run a good race in Chicago, and so we can follow you on the screens of the next Olympic Games. And I hope you also come to Rotterdam, and I can see you win there, or at least that's the weird thing, by the way. I was following on telly the Berlin Marathon, mm-hmm. and it was like after like 500 meters there was this head group of five Kenyans, and then there was this long pause, and then you saw this group of Europeans or Westerners or white people, and I that's maybe another question. How motivational is to have always Kenyans, where sometimes you see them for the first time being so strong in running. Have you ever thought of going to Kenya to train there, or to look at how they do it, or what's your thought on Kenyans? Sorry.
Yeah, I mean they're amazing athletes. They're kind of born to run, as you know. I know Reed spent a lot of time in Kenya. I know a lot of Western athletes have been going over to Kenya. It's something that it would be interesting to go over there and just see the lifestyle and see how they do it. Definitely, it would be something to it would be an interesting experience, because they're the cream of the crop. They're the best runners in the world. So it's like, you might as well, you know, go see how they do it. It would be something I would look into. I wouldn't do it in this cycle, just because I don't want to change anything between now and the Olympics.
No, of course.
But afterwards, it'd be definitely be something I would look into, because I think it would be fascinating.
You can read Running with Kenyans, which is a really entertaining book and interesting book, but maybe that gives you an idea how it is to run there. But
I really like about the Kenyans is I like their free spirit when it comes to running, because I find with a lot of Western runners is we tend to overthink it. Like we try to just, you know, this and that. We love having all the tools and all like the fancy watches and fancy equipment, whereas you go over to Kenya, they just run. You know, they just run, and they just go naturally, and they go by feel. And I think there's something to be said about that. It's just, you know, how do you become a better runner? You just run a lot and don't worry about all the fancy stuff. Just get out there, put your shoes on and run. And that's the best way to do it.
Talking about Kenyans and shoes on and run, have you seen the Berlin Marathon, the winner?
Yes, Kipchoge with his shoes.
I mean, I was like, If you looked at it and you were following it live, I was so tempted to go like, come on, please bow down and take those soles, or what do you call it, inlays out of your
insoles.
And even when he was in the finish, he didn't take them out. And I was like, did he even notice? I was really wondering. And I wondered if he would have taken them off, would have been there any difference regarding his time? Because they somehow give some air, they somehow must have physically break him down or slow him down a little bit. But it seems if he would have stopped and would have ripped them out, he would have lost like 20 meters in the race and might have not won it. I don't know.
Yeah, I saw that. It was so frustrating. Yeah, because it was some of those things like just get rid of him, and it was causing me anxiety. And I'm sure like him, like it would have been so annoying to have that happening to your shoes. And yeah, you would have thought like if losing 2 seconds to stop and pull them off would have gained him more, because they fell out early. Like it was early in the race when they were flapping around the whole dang time. I mean, come on. Yeah, it was incredible he was able to just kind of ignore it and still run a 204 marathon. Like, those guys are insane. His focus is great. Like, Kipchoge is one of the best of all time. He's one of the best runners ever. Yeah, and he proved it again in Berlin. But that was, yeah, that shoe scenario was crazy. You never think about that happening at the highest level.
No, and I wonder if he just got those insults from his sponsor right before, because that's why I started thinking about it. They are free spirit and they don't overthink it, because in the book of this English guy, the Running with Kenyans, he gets some Kenyans to Europe and they don't have a proper equipment. So New Balance, by the way, gave him shoes and running shorts just right before the start, and he put them on and it seemed the shorts weren't tying properly, so the whole marathon he had to pull his shorts up by hand, and he wasn't used to the shoes; they were a little bit too large and stuff. Yeah, it is weird how good might they run if they would overthink it like we Westerners would. It is a funny thought, but hey,
yeah.
Thank you very very much, and all the luck again. Sorry for adding another few questions at the end, but
okay.
It was a real it was a pleasure. I hope all the listeners will, if they haven't been already, become a fan of the Rob Watson Show. That's the name of the podcast once more. And shout out to Canada and greetings to Eric, who keeps the evil spirits up in the podcast, which is a lot of fun and entertaining. And and good luck to his half marathon.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the show. It was my pleasure to come on and chat with you. Yeah, thank you for having me, and you know, keep running, keep doing what you're doing. I hope your knee holds up well for Amsterdam. I'm sure it will.
I hope so too.
Get on the line and do what's work. Yeah, and greetings to everyone in Netherlands and Germany. Danke schön, I believe.
Hey,
might be a word.
Yeah, that's the word. Hey, thank you.
Awesome.
Bye.
Cheers.